morning, everybody. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us this morning. On Tuesday night, the Open Society Institute, the nonprofit organization founded by billionaire philanthropist George Soros, will continue its terrific series, Talking About Race. This is a series of lectures at the Enoch Pratt Central Library that delve into the nuanced and complex issue of race and its impact in our community. The speaker on Tuesday will be Dr. Elizabeth Nix. She's an assistant professor in the Division of Legal, Ethical, and Historical Studies at the University of Baltimore and one of the members of the steering committee of Baltimore 68, Riots and Rebirth. It's a project that examined the causes and effects of the riots that took place here and across the country following the death of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in April of 1968. And Elizabeth Nix joins me in Studio A this morning. Good morning. Good to see you.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So this this project, the Baltimore 68 Project, you studied what happened in 1968, both before and after the riots. What are the lessons from 1968 that we can learn that inform how we might move forward following the violence we experienced here last April?
Well, one of the biggest lessons that we took away was that when neighborhoods erupt and when violence takes place, it's really important to examine the underlying causes of that, because in 1968, there was a whole different set of urban trends. People were moving out of the inner cities into the suburbs. Businesses were moving out of the inner cities. And I think after 1968, people kind of said, okay, we're just going to pick up and leave, and Baltimore can rise or fall without us. And people didn't step back and take a look at what actually caused all the frustration in those neighborhoods. And it feels very different in the wake of last April here now. And the Open Society Institute's series is one of the examples of the way people are really coming out and trying to have discussions, examine the history about what could have led to that unrest.
Because you published a book in conjunction with this Baltimore 68 project, and in that you have an essay that you co-wrote that talked about some of the myths surrounding what happened with it in 1968. It was easy for people to point to the riots as the cause of, you know, this, that, or the other thing, but you were saying that some of those things actually, you know, were happening way before the riots.
Right, absolutely. And my co-author is Deborah Weiner, and she and I looked at three business districts that had been affected by the unrest in 68. And we looked at how they were running before and then what happened on, you know, during April of 1968. And then did businesses move out? Did the whole commercial life of those districts change? And actually, two of those streets were Pennsylvania Avenue and West North Avenue. And as you know, the intersection of those streets was where the CVS was, where the epicenter of the unrest this past April.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about the economic impact of what happened last April, there was a piece in the Times, the New York Times, just last Tuesday. Cheryl Gay Stolberg reported that, for example, hotel occupancy is down about 9%. The owner of a bar in Fells Point estimated he lost about $50,000 just in that one bar when the curfew was in effect for those days after the violence. We heard on Maryland Morning just about a week ago from the organizer of the Baltimore Running Festival, their registration was down 7%. So a lot of people are identifying the violence in April with specific economic problems. That happened in 1968, but you found a lot of those, a lot of the blame for those economic problems really didn't rest on the riots.
Right. So one thing that happened is it was mostly a perception of a new level of danger in the city in 1968. So people kind of would say, oh, we're not going back to Lombard Street because it looks like all of Lombard Street had burned down by the newspaper photographs. And merchants on Lombard Street actually took out ads in the paper to say, we're still open. It's not as bad as it looks. And even though there might have been a little bit of downturn right after that, a lot of those businesses bounced back. And we found, Deborah Weiner especially found in her work on Lombard Street, that was really urban renewal, some road work in the 1970s that the city took a long time to complete that really made a lot of those businesses close.
Dr. Elizabeth Nix from the University of Baltimore. She'll be speaking in the Open Society Institute's Talking About Race series Tuesday night. You're listening to Maryland Morning on 81. I'm Tom Hall. Here's Lawrence Brown. He's Dr. Lawrence Brown is professor of public health at Morgan State University. He spoke a while back with our producer, Jonna McCone, at the McCullough Homes. Here's what he had to say about one of these road projects you're talking about.
The highways that were built, many of them were built directly through black communities, tearing apart communities. And actually, when public housing was erected, you had slum clearance. So it tore down black communities that were existing at the time in order to build and erect public housing. So it might have improved to some degree the type of housing that black people lived in because the tenements were very, very poorly designed. But at the same time, it tore communities apart. Root shock is a real issue. When you tear communities apart, it tears apart. You lose so much. And I think that's a thing that's repeated in the 50s and 60s once we get to urban renewal.
So, for example, in your work on Penn North and North Avenue and the business district that was there, there was also a business district at Charles and North, which is now experiencing, something of a rebirth with the Station North Arts and Entertainment District. But the expressway and that entrance that we all use and get off many times a day at North Avenue split those two things, those two areas together, and that really spelled the downfall of both sides, didn't it?
Right. So that's 83, when 83 comes down into North Avenue. There's a great chapter in the Baltimore 68 book by Emily Lieb that's called White Man's Lane. And she talks about it wasn't just the physical highways that were built. It was the plans for the highways that kept targeting certain neighborhoods that, oh, the federal government said, we're going to build this highway through this neighborhood. And if you own property there, why would you improve the property? You know that the federal government's going to take it. So that was the plan. And then 5 years later, they would say, oh, no, we've switched the plan. And now the highway is going to go through this other neighborhood. And so now you've had neglect in one part, and then you've had new neglect. And so just the plans all over Baltimore, and as the Morgan professor is very correct, a lot of those were going through African-American neighborhoods. Those led to a decline in neighborhoods because there just logically there was no reason to invest in upkeep in those homes and businesses.
You write about the Flag House Court, which were demolished in 2001 there over near Lombard Street, Corned Beef Row, which is now also, you know, situated near Harbor East and in Little Italy. And in the 1960s, when those that public housing was built, 65% of the residents were white. By the end of the 1960s, 97% of the residents were black. Is rebirth in these neighborhoods, because the subtitle of the book is, you know, rebirth, is rebirth always equivalent with gentrification, with a mix of white people and black people living together, or in some instances, black people being displaced and, white people of higher means moving in?
Right. Gentrification is always a tricky question to talk about in Baltimore with so many vacant houses. And certainly the neighborhoods that you highlight, Lombard and Station North, those are some areas that people are very concerned about gentrification. I mean, I am a hopeful person that Baltimore can get economic development right and make it so that mixed income people of all races can live in neighborhoods that have a healthy economic underpinning, and that maybe seeing what's happened in other cities, we can avoid that kind of trap of gentrification.
The mayor has an initiative to attract 10,000 new families in the little time we have left. Who are those folks going to be? Who's going to move into Baltimore now and spur this rebirth?
Well, actually, we've had a young couple contact us from Boston, and they really feel like they want to move from finance into the nonprofit sector, and they feel like Baltimore is an affordable place that they can buy a home and that they can make a good living and live very comfortably working in the nonprofit sector. And they're actually going to they think, move into our neighborhood of Union Square. Uh-huh. So I think those kind of people see a city that actually needs them where they can make a difference. I think those are going to be the 10,000 families.
All right, so you're moving from scholarship to real estate. Very good. Congratulations. All right, well, Betsy Nix, it's great to see you. Thanks so much for coming by.
Thank you, Tom.
Dr. Elizabeth Nix from the Division of Legal, Ethical, and Historical Studies at the University of Baltimore. She'll be speaking on the Open Society Institute's Talking About Race series Tuesday night, 7 o'clock at the Enoch Pratt Free Library on Cathedral Street in Baltimore. And the University of Baltimore is also, in the aftermath of the riot and uprising following the death of Freddie Gray, offering a course on Monday nights that's open to the public. It's called Divided Baltimore. And in that course, they explore the roots of the problems that led to the violence here last April and solutions to those problems. It's held Monday evenings at 5:30 in the UB Town Hall. It's on Maryland Avenue, and it also streams live on the web. On Monday night, coming up, the topic is how the media reports manifestations of segregation, and the speakers are Andrew Martin of the Baltimore Sun and Adar Ayera from the Associated Black Charities. We've got a link to information about the OSI lecture series and the UB course on our website, wipr.org/Maryland Morning. Coming up after a break for news, Art Imitates Life, a 30-year-old play that touches on some of these very same issues. The creative minds behind the Everyman Theater's production of Fences by August Wilson. But first, here's Mr. Sterner.